New.
This is the Relevant Podcast.
It's episode 1064. This is the Relevant Podcast. Here in Orlando, I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and joining me from Loverland, Virginia, is Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Nashville, Tennessee, downtown Emily Brown.
Hey, y'all.
And also in Nashville, back from the road, artist, producer, mogul, Derek Miner.
What's happening?
Jamie is home sick. Her kids are sick today. Speaking of kids, I have a question. We have a video podcast here. Yeah. Maybe we can get this clip out in the wild so people can see what we're talking about. Jesse looks like he's ready for his first day of kindergarten. He got a nice little haircut. He's wearing a nice little short sleeve button down, and he's ready for his first school day of the year picture.
Listen,
I think he looks snazzy.
It was my kid's picture day today.
Wow,
it is ironic.
Wow.
Both of them. Am I wrong, Derek? Derek, am I wrong?
You're not, and that's why I keep saying wow.
You look so neat and clean, man. I've never seen you look so good.
I mean, below the waist, I'm still in like jeans pants.
Please get this clip out to the masses. Hey, they need to see this.
Real talk. I was wearing a t-shirt before this recording. I was like, you know what? I need to class this thing up. No, I got a haircut this week. Yeah, my hair.
Yes, you did.
Because it was getting pretty out of control. I still am like in that COVID phase where I just avoid getting haircuts because I'm like, oh, what's the point? Even though we're clearly out of that and back in society.
True that.
You know, big week down here. I want to look sharp. We got something in the water. The big music festival's kicking off tomorrow. And, you know.
The Pharrell one, looking, right?
Yeah. It's a good lineup this year. And so, you know, just trying to look sharp. But I'll be honest. I went into like the barbershop and they said, what do you want to do? You know, I mean, it's a pretty standard question. And I just said, my head's your palate. I'm willing to do whatever.
You playing with your life.
I'm willing to do whatever.
You're playing with your life.
You do not walk into a Supercuts or a Fantastic Sam's and tell them that. That person just got out of barber school.
This was a barber. This was like a barber shop that it's a one guy, one man operation. You know, I'm just sitting there and I didn't care. I just said, just do what you think is best. You know, it's like, I don't tell the dentist what I'm looking for him to do. You're the pro.
And now you got the first grade.
What do you want me to do today? Well, I would like to make it look like I'm going to the first day of school. Oh, I got you. He just gets out
and
the
he nailed
flippers.
It. He nailed it. Like I said, I don't like when I go when if I'm going to the doctor with a problem, he's not going to tell me, well, what would you like me to do about it? No, you're the professional. I'm paying you. I'm walking to the barbershop. I don't know, man. I'm over it. I can't.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Jason, you can cut this if I would get in trouble for saying this, but you look like Ellen DeGeneres right now, bro. Not gonna hush.
She's very successful in this industry, and I'll take that as a compliment.
I called you, bro.
I saw a picture the other day of Ellen posing, like standing up and posing in some sort of way, and she looked like Skip Bayless. I thought it was a Skip Bayless photo, but it was
Ellen
actually
be Ellen having
DeGeneres.
Them cuts. Like Ellen's cuts be crispy. Her and my man's an NBA. Oh my gosh, why is he sleeping with Jalen Rose? Jalen Rose and Ellen DeGeneres be having the craziest line. They be having the coldest lineups on all time, for real.
Can I be honest? The other thing too is like, what's going to get me in and out of here the quickest? I had places to be that evening, you know, and I just wanted a quick.
So basically, he said, "What do you want?" And you said, "Whatever takes 5 minutes." And he said, "I got
exactly.
you."
What's going to get me out of here? What's going to get me out of my way? Yeah, and he's like, oh, "I got the DeGeneres coming right out." Gotcha. Give me that six guard Clippers. Get you high and tight, and get you on your way. All right,
we got something. Hold on, I'm about to send y'all. Look, hey, so I ain't hating, but Ellen's cuts do be kind of fire though.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm just looking right now, like yeah.
She has a very distinctive haircut. In Jesse's defense, I do the same thing. I also only go in for a haircut maybe once a year, sometimes twice, if I'm feeling it. And I always just say, cut off the dead ends, and then whatever you think looks good. And I feel like my hair looks good.
For real, Emily?
You look great. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just hair. It grows back.
That's what I'm saying. You guys have seen me in the weeks leading up to this. I'm pretty transparent. I'm you know, it was I was looking like a lunatic, you know, like it was all over the place. It wasn't clear what was happening, what I was even going for. Sometimes you just got to get a clean slate. Let's start from the top here. There's a total, it's like, this is where the haircut situation was, real talk.
Yeah.
It was a house flipper who bought a place and was like, no, we're going to reno this thing. And they take up the floorboards and they see, oh, this is a teardown. This is a teardown, and we're just going to have to rebuild from the scratch. That's where the haircut situation was. There was no, we got to just bulldoze it, start from the top. I'm sorry. Dude, that's what's happening.
I used to do that all the time. I used to just grow my hair out to be long, like Scott Stapp Creed length.
Yeah.
This is early 2000s. Yeah. Okay. And then I would get so sick of having all that hair. I would just one night just buzz it all off, shave it all off. And then I'd be like happy with that for like a week. And I'm like, man, I want hair again. So I just start growing back and I'd grow it out to be super long. And then I get sick of that. So I'm with you on the reset.
This is how I know I'm not on a podcast with black people. Because this conversation would never happen amongst my friends with hair. Like
what?
Hair in the black community is like, man, I've seen dudes have the worst confidence in the world get a fly haircut, and then they literally go from zero to hero. Like, you just have to, oh my gosh, this is crazy that y'all just like, I just walked into the barbershop and was like, do whatever you have your way with me. Like, this does not happen in the black community. My brain, Derek, is exploding right now. It's in a good way, though, because I'm thinking like, are we too serious about our hair? Like, because I'm like,
no,
man, that's crazy.
Look at Jalen Rose, man. That's impressive. Telling you, I mean, Jalen Rose said
you should be spending $400 on every haircut.
No, he said a minimum $100.
Was it 400?
He said
minimum $100. My bad.
Minimum.
Yeah. Okay.
100.
My bad. Yeah. Minimum $100 on every haircut. That's what he said. Yeah.
But he was also talking about going weekly or twice a week, spending $100. Because you got to, you know, he keeps it nice and tight, and you got to keep it trimmed all the time. Every time he gets it trimmed twice a week, it's $100, $150. That's crazy.
Sheesh.
I will say this. It is more expensive for women to get their hair done. Like, I go in and I just get a trim and it's at least $50. Like, versus y'all go in and get a trim and it's probably like $20, $30. So
no,
it is anymore. Already more expensive, and I'm just getting like a basic cut. I also think most normal women care more about their hair than I do. I just have really long hair. So even if I cut 6 inches, it's still really long. Like, it's to my hips. It's just...
Wow.
It doesn't make that much
of a
difference.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's very long.
Yeah. Hey. I need to, it's been like 7 months. I need to get it cut.
This barbershop had a bowl of candy right on the counter. I got distracted because I was planning on, I saw they had a little bit of weight. I was going to, you know, go through some haircuts, see what's, you know, just pick up.
What do you mean go through haircuts? Like on the signs on the wall sort of thing? Or like,
no, I was going to, you know, go to IG, find something. Hey, give me this one. I got distracted by the bowl of candy, ended up in some combos with my fellow barbershop people. And by the time it was me in the chair, I forgot to look for anything. That's why I said, just do what you need to do, because I was planning on using the wait time to determine the hairstyle. But like I said, it was a chatty room that afternoon. There was candy in play, free. And, you know, I distracted. What do you want me to do?
And now you got your brand new backpack and you're ready for your first day of school. So that's exciting.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
We have a great show in store for you today. Joined by Judah and Chelsea Smith. We love them. They've been friends of the show for a long time. Excited for that conversation. The interview that Emily had with them went over an hour. You are not going to hear the hour. You're going to hear, 8 minutes of it. But it's great. In fact, there's so much good stuff. We have plans for the rest of the content. Judah's phenomenal. Also, at the end of the show, we have a game. We have a game. Just stay tuned. It's going to be fun. But right now, it slices.
Friendship, we were dramatic.
You're listening to Arlo Parks. The song is Blades.
The wait is officially over. Ann Wilson's newest album, Rebel, is out now. Following up on her Grammy-nominated debut album, My Jesus, her sophomore project is jam-packed with 16 songs and features guest artists including Chris Tomlin, Lainey Wilson, and Jordan Davis. Blending her love for God with her roots in all things country, Ann is a true rebel in modern music. Be sure to check out Ann Wilson's newest album, Rebel, available now everywhere you listen to music.
Okay, it's time for
slices.
What do you have, Jesse?
I got to be honest. I called a last minute audible on this one. Nice. I was originally going to do one about how Americans care just as much about saving the environment as they do about saving money, which I found encouraging. Bull. But then I saw this part of the stat that said 66 of respondents said they'd be willing to try anything to help save the environment. And then they went on to say those steps include turning off lights in a room and not letting a runny sink run. I'm like, that is a very low bar, but hey, at least they're considering it. So I audibled it. Don't ask how I ended up on this site, but I ended up on a flight blog called View from the Wing. Okay. And it's a blog that covers the airline industry. And they presented an interesting conundrum that happened on a recent Southwest flight that I wanted. This opens up a bigger discussion.
Is this the baby thing? The baby screaming?
Oh, no, but there's no shortage of incidents on flights these days.
Sure.
So you guys know how Southwest flights work. It's different than other airlines because you can choose your own seating and they line you up in groups. So the woman who was writing into this blog was a Southwest frequent flyer and had some sort of advantage point. So that means she was in the very first group to come onto the plane. Mm-hmm. She really wanted it. And it had like three rows with the aisle going down the middle, right? So each row had a window, a middle, and an aisle. She wanted the window. She goes up, finds her seat, sits down. Okay. Mm-hmm. Remember, this is Southwest. Mm-hmm. It's a free for all. Okay.
First come, first serve. Absolutely.
Things get very mm-hmm. aggressive. Okay. Mm-hmm. She goes, sits in her seat. All right. Mm-hmm. She's sitting there. She's claimed her seat. Another passenger comes in and says, "Hey, I would like that window seat." I don't like the people that bring their knees in and expect for you to kind of like shimmy through. I like the people mm-hmm. that get out, allow you mm-hmm. to get to your seat. Mm-hmm. And then take your seat back. She gets out of her seat to let the window passenger in. Someone comes in right behind her and snipes the seat.
Wait. You said she wanted the window seat.
No, she was in the aisle. Someone else wanted the window. So she's sitting in the aisle, right? She's claimed her spot. Someone else comes in and says, "I want the window seat." She gets out of the seat to allow the other passenger to get into the window seat. Another passenger jumps in and snipes her seat from her.
Merrick.
Okay. And then she says, "Hey, I was sitting there," and he moved her bag off the seat into the middle seat as well. And he said, "I think the middle's still open." Now,
clown.
We've been in parking. I've seen this happen in parking lots. Someone pulls out, there's someone waiting, and someone zooms in right behind him, right? Uh-huh. Is this Southwest's fault or is this the passenger's fault? He's technically playing by the rules here. It's not dissimilar from this.
Her bag was in the seat.
Is that and the only thing?
There's witnesses that she was already sitting there.
It was her seat. The witnesses came into play because the window seat person told the flight attendants and they forced the person to leave. I think this is an indication of how broken the Southwest system is. I'm sick of that cattle call. It's too intimidating and it's putting these people into this situation. The other thing I wanted to address here.
No, that guy was just a jerk.
But they made him move. Do you think technically he should have moved?
Yes.
Of course.
No question. Her bag was there. And I think he should. Matter of fact, I think they should have put him in a middle seat. They should have had him
in the back.
Yes. All the way in the back by the toilet.
Right by
the bathroom. We don't condone this
behavior.
The
smelly seat. Yeah, the one that doesn't recline too.
Yes.
That's up against the wall. Well, let me ask you this, because we're on the topic of airplane etiquette, because this is something that drives me bananas, okay? I feel like this is an unspoken, unwritten thing, but we need to get pen on paper. If we're gonna, if we're able to have airlines weigh in on a situation like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then they need to weigh on in the situation I think about every time I exit a plane.
Mm-hmm.
When you're exiting a plane, please confirm with me, guys, that the proper etiquette is you don't leave your row until the rows ahead of you have left. Are any of
yes?
Please tell me that you guys are with me, that those people who, as soon as the bell rings and are in the back of the plane that sprint ahead of everybody or are cutting ahead, please tell me that they're in the wrong. Do you guys agree with me there?
Unless it's a tight connection. If it's a tight connection.
That's right. They have an obligation. If you're in the wrong lane at an intersection and you need to get over, you kind of make eye contact with that car to the left of you and say, "Can I get in? I'm so sorry." You motion, "Will you let me in front of you?" Right? The people with the tight connections in the back need to make it known, "Hey, okay. I'm late for my connection. Is it okay if I get in front of you?" Everybody will say, "Yes, go ahead. You know what I mean? But like, if you just be rude and run up, mm-hmm. and don't tell mm-hmm. people that you're like 5 minutes from your connection, like, then that's on you for not communicating.
I feel like they need a little flag system because it's a lot of communicating for like five rows ahead. If you have a little blue flag, "Hey, can I, this means I've got a flight here." There needs to be some kind of system because these kind of situations are going to
flag.
Maybe a whistle.
Not a whistle. On a plane.
Please, God, a little honky whistle.
Horn. That means, oh, he's got a connection. He's got the honky horn out, you know?
He's got the honky horn connection. And it's something that the flight attendants can hand out because they know your connections. So they're going, do their final checks. They hand you a little honky horn.
These are
to
all
get you
terrible
up to the
ideas.
And the reason it's a honky
ideas,
horn is
that they're not good ideas at all.
It's supposed to be, you're supposed to be kind of punished for it because you really should have planned your flight better. Like, you should
be. But hey, the delay might have been the airline's fault, not your fault.
Right. What if
it doesn't matter. You're cutting in front of people. It would give me a little satisfaction if the people that were like, "Sorry, I got a good flight," had to honk a little horn. It would just make me feel a little bit better about life. I think it would add a little whimsy. I think it would take the edge off these confrontations, you know? Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. I think that would be torture. Like, if somebody was just honking a horn, I'm on a plane. It's 7:45 a.m. Yeah, I'm trying to just get to work. I do not want to hear a bicycle horn behind my head for any reason. Like, I don't care what's wrong.
But just telling people, "I got a tight connection." We've all witnessed this. Well, so do I. How tight is yours? And then it's this whole thing for five aisles up. We don't have time for that. The honky horn, the whistle, or as I originally suggested, the flag.
What do you do with the flag? You're behind the people. They can't see your flag. They're facing forward.
Jesse.
It's a long flag. You can hold it.
You wave it in front of them? Like a long stick?
It extends at least four rows.
It extends, yeah.
Yeah.
Four
yeah.
rows like up, you got a little like a flag. Oh, there's somebody behind
me. Retractable.
You wave it in front of their face.
Jesse, retractable like this a car.
These are terrible ideas. They're not good at all.
That's
they're
really
bad.
Funny.
I'm
really
just saying, these confrontations are going to keep happening, guys, until we figure out a system, a reasonable system. And I've introduced
those
solutions.
Systems were not the ones.
I will say Southwest is
they're asking
like,
for this
so
stuff.
I've been flying Southwest a lot recently. I literally was on a Southwest flight last night, and it is insane thinking about the fact that like it is just a free for all.
I hate it. It's stressful.
I hate it. And I love, I will say the last two flights I've been on, Jesse, you would be so proud. I've had conversations with people on flights, and it's actually been quite delightful. Got a free drink out of one of the conversations, so not too bad.
I need y'all to help me. I don't know if we have time. What is stressful about that? I don't understand what's stressful. Because it doesn't stress me at all.
Here's what's stressful to me. The way my brain works, I don't plan ahead about stuff, especially travel and all that. So I book my ticket and I don't think about that flight again until it's time to leave, right? And so for Southwest, the fact that you have to either pay extra to get into A, or you have to like set a reminder to log you in and like check in, I forget that step. And so whenever I show up, and again, I'm a person who shows up and I time it where I never break stride from the moment I leave my car. I break stride and I go straight from my car and I go straight onto the plane. Like, I do not get there early. And so for me, that is the worst airline for me because I'm always in a middle seat in the back because I'm C, you know?
Here's the other thing too, that's created. I've been at multiple Southwest flights where I've seen verbal arguments. Okay. Like legit arguments. Where they line you up because they have like 1 through 15 is 16 through 30, right. all the way back for your groups, right?
Like, I'm 6, you're 12, you should be behind
Everyone's playing, everyone's looking down at the person's print, you know, if they have a printed boarding pass or they're looking over their shoulder, see on their phone. This slice that I brought is the kind of conflict's going to arise when you present a system of insanity and don't offer solutions like honky horns or whistles or retractable antennas with flags on them. I'm just saying that people are taking the law into their own hands here.
And I guess nobody bothers me because I'm dressed in all black. I got my AirPods in, I got a hoodie on, and I'm about 6'2". So nobody ever questions me whenever I go online. They're not like, I don't get any of what y'all just said. That y'all
go ahead,
so,
sir.
I do think the worst part is if you're in the last group, because I have been annoyed. Like, I'm 5'8", and so like I need some sort of leg room. So I really for like sure. the aisle seat, and I did get stuck in a middle seat next to a woman who was maybe 4'11", and she had the aisle seat, and I was like, "Why? Like, we should have had a conversation where like I clearly needed the aisle seat over you." But it was like, was that weird confrontation? But I was C group, so I was stuck with the middle
just
seat.
Just do the early bird check in, so you
got to plan ahead for that stuff.
No, you literally just have to add it. You just when you're buying the ticket, you just add it on. Early bird check-in.
I hate being nickel and dime. Like, out of matter of principle, I won't pay for those extras. I can't handle it.
The middle seat.
Exactly. That's why I don't like it. I only fly Delta.
But with Delta, if you buy your ticket too late, guess what? Enjoy the middle seat.
Nah, I have status. I get upgraded every time on Delta. I'm good.
Just saying, well, Southwest is causing major problems out here and stressing me out. Like, even thinking about this stuff.
I heard back in the day that Southwest had that system because they were too cheap to buy the ticketing system that the major airlines had, and they never like wanted to invest the millions and millions of dollars to upgrade it. That's what I heard, but I just Googled it and that's wrong. It says Southwest Airlines has long argued that its unassigned seating policy is popular with passengers and facilitates speedier boarding, which means planes spend less time at the gate and more time in the air, generating them more money because they have more flights per day. So it'll never change. If it makes them more money, it's never going to change. So
it don't bother me.
There you go.
I'm going to continue to bring this nature of slices until the madness stops. That is my threat, Southwest.
All right. What do you have, Emily?
Okay. I have some information about an interesting new study. First off, okay, do you guys have like a go-to comfort food for when you're kind of feeling down?
Like Cheez-Its?
Okay.
You mean Cheez-Its, like a snack, or do you mean like I need Mexican? Or
just what,
or,
like if you're like, oh, I just really want this. Like, do you have like a go-to comfort food that you make?
Like specifically when you're feeling down, like you're sad. Like, don't people like eat ice cream and stuff when they're sad? Like they get the pint and they put on sweatpants and watch sad movies.
Sure, some people do. Yeah. Is that what you do? Are you trying to not include yourself, but sort of include yourself in that group?
The last time I had ice cream, I was probably 10. I don't know.
Wow. That explains a lot. That's sad. And it's in itself. That makes me want to have ice cream right now because I'm so sad for you.
My kid likes ice cream. We have plenty of it. I just don't want. Anyway.
No, happy or sad, I love some good down and dirty fast food. There's nothing like it, no matter my mood. Yeah.
No, you can't do happy or sad. It's your sad food. I know where she's going with this. Derek, okay. What's your sad food?
All food is my sad food.
Quantity.
Yeah,
it's quantity. It's whatever's in the fridge.
No, okay. It's just, I'm usually like, if I'm sad, I'm like, man, let me go get something that I like. And then it's just whatever the vibe is at the moment. You know what I'm saying?
Got it.
So I don't really have a specific thing.
I'm with Jesse. I do like a good fried food. I think it makes me feel better. But apparently, according to a new study, frequent consumption of fried foods, especially fried potatoes, so French fries, is linked with a higher risk of anxiety and depression versus people who just don't eat fried food altogether.
Can I ask a question about this? Is it correlative, or does the fried potatoes cause something? Or is it just when people are more, you know, feeling anxious and depressed, they, you know, tend to gravitate towards cheap, greasy food? You know what I mean? Like,
this was exactly when we saw this study, we asked the same question, because it seems like they're trying to say, if you eat a lot of French fries, it will make you depressed. But common sense says to us, when you're depressed, you eat a lot of French fries. And so it's just like when you're surveyed, I eat a lot of French fries and I'm depressed, but you don't know which caused which.
It's like, is something in my gut biome reacting to, you know, fried potato? Or yeah, exactly. That's what did they make the determination, Emily?
Well, no, so they do need to do further study. One of the experts spoke about it and said that there is definitely a correlation that the intake of fried food does increase the risk of anxiety and depression, but they still haven't found a correlation between it. Does it cause it or does it just further it? And so they are still studying that. But in general, it is saying that whether it causes it or whether you already have it, fried food's probably not helping your depression, anxiety.
I could see that.
Right.
I could see that.
Right. Yeah,
which is sad news.
Because think about it too. Like when you eat badly, it makes you feel poorly.
Right. Sluggish.
Right? Yep. And so then it just like, it's a snowball. It's like when your physical body, mm-hmm. it doesn't have good endorphins going through it. It compounds depression and anxiety. And then the depression and anxiety makes you less motivated and you're going to eat more poorly and you're not going to work out. And it's just like this snowball effect. Right. So it's like, it really is a thing. Like I sometimes I'll look at like my diet and go, is this indicating something is bigger is going on with me? You know what I mean? Like I've been eating some fast food lately. What's going on? You know, but yeah, I think it's interesting. This study is starting to connect the two. But anyway, cool. All right. What do you have, Derek?
Can anybody give me the 10 commandments real quick?
I can give you a couple of them.
Give me a couple of them.
My favorites or all of them? My personal 10 commandments or the one that God brought down
the
from
ones
Mount
that, The ones that came from don't Mount covet, Sinai.
Don't covet your neighbor's wife. Don't steal.
Don't murder. Don't have steal. God's before
all
me.
All right, well, let's stop don't steal, right?
Okay.
So let's say that you're a pastor. You teach those commandments. How would you feel if you found out that your pastor stole $130,000 from the church to cover his gambling debts?
That feels like a double sin there.
Right? Like, double sin.
Like a double rainbow. Like this, like a double sin.
So wait, like, you're saying it cancels it out. Like a double negative.
Apparently, that's what Greg Neal from Rochester thought, because he stole 130 bands from the church to cover his gambling debts. And I'm literally trying to figure out. First of all, I'll say this. I feel bad for a lot of pastors, because this man probably couldn't really seek any help for his gambling debt or his gambling problem because, you know, being a pastor, you're not supposed to have an issue like this. So what happens is you make decisions like this and it exposes you, but in a bad way, because you're looking at 20 years in prison, in a fine. So, I mean, you're looking at 20 is the max that you could get. So like, I wish you just would have stepped down and just said, I need to take some time because I got a problem, y'all.
But wasn't even the pastor. He was the executive
pastor. Right. So this is the man with the money.
Runs all the money. Right.
Judas.
Exactly.
He was Judas.
Right.
It's Judas. But he's not the only person that's happened. This a lady in Alabama stole $89,000 from her church. And Chanel Easton of Oklahoma City was indicted on wire fraud and aggregated identity theft for stealing $360,000 from a church. So looks like we need to go back over these commandments and we need a refresher is what it seems to me in the modern day church.
Texas is trying to put the 10 commandments in every classroom right now. Maybe we need to put the 10 commandments in every church right now. Maybe just we need to remind.
Let's start there.
yeah. That's funny.
And these people are being prosecuted by the Secret Service. Like, this isn't a small matter. It's the Secret Service that's after them. Yeah.
Oh, because of wire fraud and stuff. Yeah. That's true. Man. All right. Well, that'll do it for Slices. There's more. We cover the stories like this every day over at relevantmagazine.com. Go check it out. All right. Stay tuned. Up next, Judah and Chelsea Smith join us.
Every morning and lead me to streams of grace. You go before me every breath and every step I take.
for all of your goodness and all you've already done.
You're listening to Neon Feather and One Common. It is the Altar Here on Earth remix. Great song.
Well, today's show is brought to you in part by Crown College, a boldly Christian and academically excellent college providing a lifelong, authentic community. Crown offers on-campus, online, and graduate programs, 18 NCAA Division III sports, international service opportunities, and a vibrant student life. Discover why Crown College is ranked top 3 in America for online Christian education. Visit crown.edu today.
Well, our guests today are Judah and Chelsea Smith, the Smiths' co-pastor, Church Home, in Seattle and Los Angeles. And they're doing some exciting and innovative stuff these days. We sat down with them to learn more about how they're expanding what church can and should look like and how they're embracing new technology to reach a whole new group of people. Here's our conversation with our friends, Judah and Chelsea Smith.
I think I would really just love to hear, you know, these last few years, like, how have things been going for the church? And, you know, what are maybe some new strategies that y'all have implemented in this crazy time?
It's been really interesting. You know, we had plans to incorporate online before the pandemic. And then, but at that point, we were still fully functional as we are always had been in buildings at the same time as trying to introduce an online model. And that was great. Everyone was happy with that. And then the pandemic really, I think, forced us, but maybe to use a God word, a faith word, enabled us to finish that switch and really build church the way that we would build it if it started online, is instead of having a buildings first mentality, which is what we still had. And that was a tough switch even for us to make philosophically, in our heart, to have faith that people could actually meet Jesus, be discipled, grow in their relationship with him outside of the church building. And I think the reason we struggled with that even is because we hadn't seen church like that before. We grew up in a very traditional church. We were church friends, kids together. So when I say we, it really was a we. And man, youth camps, my life was changed. You know, I met Jesus at the retreats, building every Sunday school were really wonderful experiences for us. And so to go and pioneer a church that would look different than the way we encountered Jesus, wow. I don't think we were prepared for the faith that would even take for us. You know, the Bible talks about faith as the evidence of things that are not seen. So the faith required to see what hasn't been seen. And so we've just been really finding that fight of faith for ourselves and then for our community to bring the community along that, hey, your children are going to encounter Jesus in a real way in a church kids party. And they're going to grow with him every day at a bedtime story. And your students are, you know, and bring people along that journey when it still hasn't yet been seen has been a fun leadership challenge. But God's been with us every step of the way. But it's been fun as we've gotten into this. I feel like we've incorporated really things that have been really meaningful. I probably should have got the exact stat for this interview, but there was a study that was done over 10 years. Bill Hybels' church actually did it. I think the name of the book is called Moves, that they published a study. I'm sure you've heard of it, or maybe not. But they did the study for 10 years, over 250,000 people, for how do people actually grow in their faith? Because it's such a mystery. I mean, I know even for me, if I could look back, I know there's beautiful moments, but how do we actually grow in faith? What actually people? And one of the results of this study was absolutely shocking. And it said that there wasn't any difference in people who experience church, who go to a building, who go to church 4 times a year or 40 times a year. Their spiritual growth was actually the same, which kind of blew our mind. And we've been giving our lives to hosting weekly services, you know, like seven on a Sunday. Like, what have we been doing with our lives? But the flip side of that was that people who have a daily practice at least 4 days a week were the people who really showed significant growth. strengthened our faith and enabled us to go all in and realize, no, people who spend time with Jesus every day, it's how people are going to grow. And then not just when they do that by themselves, but when they do that within the context of community.
You know, I'm curious, I feel like a lot of pastors probably recognize that and maybe realize that they need to somehow stop or, you know, implement different strategies in their life, but they just don't know how. So can you share, like, how did y'all recognize and start sort of implementing these boundaries and these changes in your schedule?
Oh, that's such a good question.
Can I just say that implicit in all of this is a significant cost. And I think that's where a lot of this conversation begins, but it's oftentimes where it ends, if I'm really honest. And that cost is, it could be reputation, it could be social status, it could be, you know, things like attendance and giving can be greatly affected if the leader, minister, communicator, preacher, teacher needs to create more rhythm and space. And so whatever Chelsea's about to say, I just hope that our reader understands, hey, it's going to cost you something. But Jesus did say, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world, but in the process lose his own soul? Right. And I fear, Emily, that pieces of our soul are starting to break off. Mm-hmm. And we're losing the wholeness and the buoyancy that I think God designs for every leader and every person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, counting the cost is so important. And it's different for everybody. So I think you can always hear
Brian.
You know, exactly.
Yeah, I'm projecting completely.
But to know that there's always a cost to boundaries and margin and people like getting their way all the time, not being told no.
Stuff like that.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think it has to start, first of all, with the theology and our view of God and our view of Jesus, and realizing that as pastors, we're not saviors. We are facilitators, and we get to tell the story of Jesus, and we get to lead a community and an organization. But Jesus is the one who does the saving. He's the one who does the heavy lifting. And if we really, as leaders, really, really, truly embrace that, then saying no and creating that margin is not easy, but it's easier. Mm. I think that's the first step. You know, and the other thought is Hebrews talks about we have to labor to enter into rest, that it is work to gain rest. So often it feels counterintuitive. It's like it takes too much work to rest. So why don't I just keep doing the work and then, you know, rest when I retire, rest later. But love Hebrews. So there is a promise for us, and that promise is rest. And it doesn't mean we don't work, but we work from a place of peace, from a lack of striving, knowing that, you know, Jesus has already done the big part. He's done the heavy lifting. And so we just get to be facilitators and do what he asks us to do. I know it's not a very practical answer, but like, count the cost.
There are going to be people who want to stick to the tradition that they've always known, and they're just really, really sort of hesitant to it. And I feel like I've seen studies that particularly it is sort of a generational thing. Older generations are much more accustomed to what they know, and younger generations are willing to embrace that change. And I'm curious, do you think that's going to have an impact on the future of church, this like sort of generational divide in a way?
What would you say
about it? I mean, first of all, yeah, as we said earlier, completely understand people who want to do church in a traditional way. And we'd say, keep doing that. Just let us do it the way we want to. I think one of the beauties of the church is in bringing generations together, you know, and Titus talked about that, you know, specifically to women. Hey, older women, teach the younger women. And so we are not giving up on that idea. I think there's a part of us that will fight for a multi-generational church, because there is beauty and young people need to learn from old people. Old people need to learn from young people. Like, God put us in families for a reason, and families are multi-generational. And so we really would love to continue to see that happen and grow. We have faith for it. Don't necessarily. And I mean, even like Judas, it's interesting though. Older people who've been in the church, who are of an older generation, very much want their tradition. But there's hundreds and thousands and millions upon millions of people in this country and all over the world who are of an older generation, who have not had a church experience, who don't have preconceived ideas for what they expect church to be. And they can just, you know, just come to church home and do a daily guided prayer, weekly service with friends, and just come to the community without any of that traditional expectation. And even like Judah's friends, they're doing great with it. So maybe we'll get the multi-generational beauty and strength that way.
And I definitely, I'll just add this. I definitely think the prophecy is true, that part of the phenomenon that will happen in church is that old men will dream dreams and young men will see visions, which means this phenomenon will happen within the church. And it has happened, and it will continue to happen. And that is, you get old people dreaming again. Life has a way of driving out the dreaming. But, you know, as you get older, you dream less. But there's this phenomenon that happens in the spiritual community called the church, where old people want to dream again. And then young people, what are they prone to? Well, they're prone to just living in the moment, just living for the moment, and not seeing past the moment, and not seeing visions of the future and what's possible. So I think the phenomenon that happens when Jesus is central and Jesus is the focal point is you get old people dreaming again, and you get young people living past the moment, living past the weekend, and they start seeing visions of what could be possible with the duration of their stay here on earth. And I think you have something very, very special in your hands. Each successive generation has a responsibility to the text, a responsibility to the book, a responsibility to the story. And what each successive generation does with the greatest story ever told, which is the story of Jesus, is very interesting. I predict that our generation will tell the story in so many different forms, maybe more than any generation before us. We're already the metaphor, the illustrations, the movies that are coming out, the shows that are coming out, and Chelsea and I are part of that as well. We want to get involved more in productions and movies and shows, and to help tell the story, in some cases in a sneaky way where people don't even know that they're hearing the story of redemption and forgiveness, which is almost exclusively the story of Jesus. So it's exciting, but are there hurdles? There always is with each successive generation.
And there's one other thing I have to say before we move on. Yes. And that is that one of the most significant groups of people in Church Home to Judah and I is a group of about a dozen men and women who are now probably mostly in their 70s, 80s. I think there's one group maybe still in their 60s, who pray for us every week, every time we gather together. We're on a text chain with them. My dad was in the hospital with COVID. I immediately text them and get prayers in return. And I love the beauty and the strength and the significance that group of people adds. And so I am grateful that we are part of a church that has a multi-generational heritage, and really amazed at the people who are a little bit older, who have stuck along for the ride with us and who have really responded in a spiritual way. And this group of a dozen people are just, I mean, they're Jesus with skin on, for sure. And they add so much value and weight to the church.
Truly.
That was Judah and Chelsea Smith. If you haven't checked out Church Home, the app, it's pretty great. Just go check it out and follow them on IG. Chelsea always does their Marriage Monday stuff, which is really cool. And Judah's feed is full of preaching clips. So it's a great way to cleanse the timeline, you know. Good follows. All right, stay tuned. Up next, it's our game, Roadside Attraction. You're listening to Generationals. The song is Waking Moment.
Well, Relevant has a lot happening this year, and we don't want you to miss a thing. Make sure to sign up for our newsletter right there on the front page at relevantmagazine.com, and we'll send you our top five trending stories into your inbox every weekday. We'll also send you a weekly podcast newsletter with the latest episodes, some fan extras, and first peeks at the new shows that we're going to be rolling out throughout this year. Make sure to sign up. It's the best way to keep in touch with everything we got going on.
Okay, it's time for
Roadside Attractions.
Here's what we're going to do. This will be a quick game. I'm going to tell you, we were talking about road trips and stuff on the last podcast, and the guy was thinking about roadside attractions. You know, people are going to road trip. It's getting to be summertime, and you're making your summer road trip plans. So we are going to quiz our cast on their knowledge of iconic roadside attractions. I'm going to tell you an actual roadside attraction, a real business that exists, and you're going to tell me what state you think it's located in. All right. And if you're totally stumped, I'll whittle it down to three options, but just go ahead and try and guess. Here we go. We'll start with you, Derek. Whoever gets the most right wins the game. Okay. The Hammer Museum, Derek. What state do you think the Hammer Museum is located in?
Now, is this the artist or the tool?
As I was going to say, California.
You're going to say California? No, Alaska. So if you're ever road tripping up to Alaska, you can stop into the Hammer Museum.
And it's like actually like the tools.
It's hammer. Just and a you bunch know, of different hammers.
We yeah. know there's a sign on all of the displays. Mm. Can't touch this. Please don't.
Yeah.
It's the hammer.
Please don't. Yep. Yep.
Sorry.
Please hammer. Don't hurt him. All right, Jesse, you're up. The Rainbow Rock Shop. What state do you think the Rainbow Rock Shop is in?
That sounds like something in like Sedona to me, like in Arizona. I'm going to say Arizona.
It is Arizona.
How it sounds like that? something, you know, those crystal hippies out there, you know, good for
wow.
them.
Wow. Good job. All right. Emily, you're up. Pez Visitor Center. Where's that located?
Where would Pez be? That feels kind of Midwest to me. Mm-hmm. I'll go Iowa.
Connecticut. It's real big in the Northeast. Pez.
Ooh, interesting.
Actually, I knew this. There's a Pez documentary on Netflix about a guy who would fly over to Europe to get like contraband Pez from the European plant, and he would smuggle them back into the U.S. and sell them to collectors. And the Pez headquarters is in Connecticut. Or the Pez US headquarters is in Connecticut because they were trying to sue the guy.
That's not real.
Interesting.
It is very real.
That's not real.
The dude made like $500,000 selling black market Pez.
Did he go
absolutely.
To jail?
Yeah, the Pez US ultimately won. But yeah.
Big Pez.
Connecticut, man.
Big Pez state. Coming out the man.
All right, Derek, you're up. Monkey Island. Where's that? Where's Monkey Island?
What?
Monkey Island. It's an actual island full of monkeys. Where is it?
In the United States.
Correct.
What state do you think would allow this to happen?
It's got to be Florida.
It is. It's just outside of Tampa.
It's got to be Florida. Like, there's no other place in the U.S.
I told Emily
that
about this.
Sense.
I was like, I got to ask somebody other than Jesse, because Jesse and I have been talking about Monkey Island for about 15 years.
Yeah. So y'all
because,
have an island full of monkeys, bro?
It's like a sanctuary, like a you know, preserve to rehabilitate monkeys. But like, it hits the news every few years that the monkeys found a way to jump over the river and they start roaming around Tampa.
Can I be honest with you? The footnote to this story is Florida has a monkey rehab center. Is also pretty interesting.
All right, Jesse, you're up. Doll's Head Trail. Where is that?
Doll's Head Trail?
Yes.
Doll's Head Trail sounds like something that'd be like in the Pacific Northwest. Something, I'd say Washington State.
Georgia has doll's heads. Emily, you're up. The Leaning Tower of Niles. It's a miniature replica of the Leaning Tower of Pisa, but it's in Niles. Where is that?
I'm trying to think who would have that.
Just a roadside attraction.
I'll give that one to Oklahoma.
It's Illinois. You're not too far off. You're heading through the middle of the country. All right, Derek, you're up. Right now, Jesse's the only one who scored, so it's one.
No,
this
he's
is
not.
The final round.
Wait, no, Derek got Florida.
Derek got Florida. No, I'm so sorry. All right. All right. This is the final round. It's tied 1-1. This one is worth 2 points each. So it's anybody's game. Mm-hmm. Derek, you're up. The world's biggest ball of paint. World's biggest ball of paint. How is that even a thing?
I didn't know paint. Like, are you saying like a paintball or is this dried?
Maybe it's like
paint?
The, you know how dried paint like it turns into like a skin, and maybe they started rolling that up, and then they just kept adding.
Ohio,
it's big.
You're close. It's Indiana. You're close.
Same thing.
Yeah,
same right. difference.
Jesse, the future birthplace of Captain Kirk. The future birthplace of Captain Kirk.
So that's a very that's got to be a state with like a low bar for notable things. I'm going to say like a Delaware.
Iowa. It's in Iowa.
That's my logic was sound.
All right, Emily, if you get this, you can win. Here we go. The world's largest collection of the world's smallest versions of the world's largest things. I'm going to say it again. This is the name of the business. This is on the sign. The world's largest collection of the world's smallest versions of the world's largest things. What state does that business exist in?
Gotta be the Midwest.
Correct.
Kansas.
Emily wins. That's crazy.
This is not good. Real. Are you serious?
Good job, Emily. It is a real business with a real sign.
Wait, say it one more time.
The world's largest collection of the world's smallest versions of the world's largest things. There you go.
Congrats. Okay, congrats. Hey, congrats.
We got to go to Kansas to see this for ourselves.
Congrats.
All right, congrats, Emily, for winning.
Roadside attractions.
Hey, before we wrap things up, you know, I've been telling you about it every podcast. Go read it. The spring edition of Relevant is out now. The digital edition is available for free. Just click on the magazine tab right there at relevantmagazine.com. Also, check out all the great stuff that comes with Relevant Plus, the best way to experience our content. Plans start as low as just $2.50 a month. If you like to support independent media and don't like advertising, you can remove all the advertising. Just got to help us pay for it. There you go. Go check that out. You can find out all the info at the Relevant Plus tab at relevantmagazine.com. Also, make sure to follow us on all the socials. And if you like this podcast, if you're still listening right now, tell people about it. Wherever you get the show, rate it, review it, share clips, post it on your stories. It helps get word out, helps the algorithm. And we enjoy seeing the feedback as well. All right. Well, on that note, we will wrap things up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
Millie Brown.
And I'm Derek Miner.
All right, we'll see you on Friday. Have a great week, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
This barbershop had a bowl of candy right on the counter. I got distracted.
Relevant Podcast Network.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.